Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to share a new service called Getida that Ken and I have been using that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for firing the man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?
Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast, a show for anyone who wants to be their own boss. If you sit in a cubicle every day and know you are capable of more, then join us. This show will help you build a business and grow your passive income streams in just a few short hours per day. And now your hosts, serial entrepreneurs, David Schomer and Ken Wilson.
Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast. On today's episode, we have the pleasure of interviewing Jeff Oxford. Jeff is the founder of 180 Marketing, a firm that specializes in providing SEO services to e-commerce sellers. On today's episode, we will be discussing SEO practices that Jeff uses on his own personal websites and then rolls out to his clients. Be sure to stay tuned for Jeff's three tips that will increase the ROI of your website in just a few short minutes. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. We are as well. So to start things off, as the founder of 180 Marketing, can you share us the story behind that creation and what motivated you to start that company?
The story goes back to graduated college. I hear all this stuff about passive income. I want to jump on the bandwagon, and e-commerce and drop shipping seems like a great way to do it. So I created my open cart store, started drop shipping beer pong tables. I mean, here I am, a college kid, just trying to stick to what I knew. And beer pong was one of them at the time. And, you know, I built it up. I was able to rank top three for beer pong tables and a lot of other keywords using SEO. And at the time, I was also working full time as an SEO. Ended up selling that off to a manufacturer. I'm like, okay, I think there's something here. Let me do rinse and repeat. Let's do it again. My next e-commerce site was drop shipping 3D printers, and, you know, bigger ticket margin or bigger tickets. I was, instead of selling like $100 table, I was selling $3,000, you know, electronics. And my first month, I made 30 grand in sales, and I was so excited. My second month, it turns out 90% of those sales were using fraudulent credit cards, and I got hit with a bunch of chargebacks. So I went from being up, in my mind, 30,000 to being in the hole about 20 grand because I already shelled out money to send the product, and the revenue I would have gotten was pulled out of my bank account. It hurt. I was, you know, 23 at the time, didn't have a lot of money. So I'm like, it really put a kind of a dent in my ambitions. And I realized I enjoy e-commerce marketing. I really like SEO. The operations side might not be my forte. So I made a decision from that day forward. I'm just going to focus on e-commerce SEO consulting. Thing. And that's where 180 Marketing was born. I've been doing it ever since.
Very nice. So, Jeff, have you ever worked for the man?
I have. Yeah. Okay. After college, I worked for a few different SEO companies. So, okay. Joined as an SEO specialist, worked my way up to like an SEO project manager. And then I was leading the SEO department for a fairly large digital marketing agency working with Fortune 500 companies. I'd say all in, I probably had about 2 years working for the man. And during those 2 years, I came across, I'm sure you guys are very familiar with Tim Ferriss's 4-hour work week. That was my fuel for getting out as soon as possible. It's like that itch you have to scratch. And I just remember driving to work, just playing 4-hour work week, listening to podcasts. I'm just trying to figure out like, how can I get out of this as soon as possible and start my own thing.
Very nice. And last question, then I'll kick it over to Ken. What advice would you give to people that are working a day job in a profession that they really enjoy, like you were with SEO, but want to fire the man? What advice would you give to them?
I think it's just slow and steady incremental progress. Like, just keep your goal at the front of your mind. It might not happen in a few months. It might take a year, might even take a few years. But as long as you're on the right path, you're going to get there eventually. It's not a question of if, but when. So, you know, there's going to be ups and downs. For me, it's just knowing what I want. And, you know, even if I'm tired after a day's work, and I just want to rest or go on the couch and watch TV, I'd still open up my laptop. I'd still do, you know, write product descriptions for my e-commerce site. So you just got to keep making incremental progress. another issue that I don't think a lot of people talk about is that the golden handcuffs. Like, you can run into the trap where your company's paying you so well, it can kind of kill your ambitions. Like, well, I'm making, you know, 80, 90, 100 or more thousand per year. You know, why would I leave this? So you have to also kind of in your mind, remember that that's your ceiling. And, you know, who knows what it could be if you, you know, fire the man and go off on your own adventure.
No, that's excellent advice. And golden handcuffs they're tough, especially if you're mid-career or something like that, and you've gotten into a position where you're kind of pigeonholed. And so excellent advice, Jeff. So thanks for sharing your story and your background. My girlfriend's son is a junior at a big party college. I won't name the name, but I never knew a beer pong table existed until I visited him at he lives in a frat house. And so they have an outdoor and an indoor beer pong table, and it doubles as a ping pong. And so it's kind of cool if you were drop shipping those. It's kind of like it's a large product. And so, that's kind of cool. My question I've got for you. And so being in marketing and SEO, and so data and metrics are kind of drive profitability. And so how do you at 180 Marketing, how do you balance on the marketing side, the creative, and then on the data side, like data and metrics, how do you blend those to find the right strategy? Do you have any insight in that?
Yeah, the short, like, that's one thing that's cool about SEO and digital marketing in general. You have the creative side, you also have the analytics side. So the creative side is usually forming your hypothesis. Maybe you want to test, you know, different buttons or test different title tags or test different colors or test a new layout. So that's where the creative side comes in. It's forming that hypothesis. And then the analysis, kind of more data driven side, is reviewing the data to see, you know, how good was your creativity? Was the creative part of your brain, did it increase conversion rates? Did it increase your rankings? Or do you need to try something else? So I think it's, you know, using data to kind of inform how well your creativity performed and then adjusting accordingly.
Very nice. Very nice.
Cool.
When you form that hypothesis, what is the metric for we are done with this test, right? Have you run it by 1,000 users, or is it,
yeah.
How do you know when you've arrived at a decision?
So I'll try to keep this within like the SEO lens, but let's say we're doing content marketing and we're trying to think of a piece of content to promote that's going to be attractive to bloggers. So we'll come up with a title or an angle that we think is compelling. We'll promote it and we'll kind of see how it did. And for us, like a big portion of SEO is link building. So we want to see, you know, what was our response rate? What was our success rate? And you know, sometimes you get a home run, you get a piece of content with dozens of links, or maybe even more than 100. But a lot of times though, even for people that have been doing this a long time, you get a piece of content that maybe falls flat on its face and only gets, you know, a few shares or a few backlinks. So it's just kind of, you know, coming up with, again, can you come up with your hypothesis? Why did this fail? What could we try next time? Was the angle, was it not close enough to the bloggers that were promoting the content to? Was there issues with the design? Do we have to kind of change the layout? Was it too long? Was it too short? And just kind of doing these reiterative tests, and you can kind of get closer and closer saying, okay, like this is what our target audience and our bloggers are probably looking for. Let's, you know, let's iterate on this and learn from our shortcomings so we can create something that people like.
So the number of links is an important metric you're mentioning. Is there a time frame that you know, do you give it a month or do you give it 6 months? What would be the typical time frame of a test?
Typically, it's like if we're doing a content marketing campaign, we're probably going to promote that from anywhere from 300 to 500 different bloggers. So our goal, you know, we don't, just for email deliverability reasons, we don't want to blast it all on one day. We usually kind of spread it out over a month. I'd say within 1 to 2 months max, we should see, you know, how was our response rates? How many of the links did it pick up? There's still the evergreen portion of it, where if you have a piece of content, it might just attract backlinks naturally, but you can get a pretty good idea of how receptive, you know, bloggers are to a piece of content, you know, within that initial promotion process.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
What is something that you think most e-commerce entrepreneurs get wrong about SEO?
This is something I love to talk about. So many e-commerce store owners I talk to, they all have blogs and they're spending so much time and energy creating blog posts, almost for the sake of just creating blog posts for that matter. There's not a lot of strategy that goes into it. You always hear people say, oh, create great content. You need to keep having more and more content. And that's partially true, but I see so many times there's no strategy behind it. So for example, I've seen e-commerce sites selling furniture that are blogging about parenting tips because their target audience is likely families. And it might drive traffic, but it's not going to drive conversions. Or you see people writing content with no keywords behind it, or it's just there's no kind of plan. So I'd say blogging and content marketing can be a huge avenue for traffic and revenue. But you have to make sure you understand why you're doing it instead of just doing it because you think you're supposed to.
No, that's really good. And I think I would fall into that space. Well, we have a strategy and a plan on low-hanging fruit keywords and trying to stack those on top of there. And so, but yeah, I definitely agree with you. Like, you have to have the right keywords to target who is going to be purchasing your product or bring the people in that are going to be interested in buying your product. Like, a little bit of a deeper level, this is, we have a couple of e-commerce sites where we were hit with the helpful content update last, I think it was Q3 or Q4, August, September range last year. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you recommend to e-commerce clients that if you're hit with the Google update, how do you recover from that? Do you have any steps to do that?
It's really tough. I'll give you a few tips about it. So with these updates, kind of just setting the stage, when Google has an update, it's spending a lot of processing power doing deeper evaluation than normally for all the sites. It's going to kind of look deeper into your pages and your engagement signals and everything. They can't do that all the time because it just requires so much processing power, and processing the entire web at that scale is expensive. So they can only do it maybe a few times a year. So if you get hit with an update, even if you do everything right, you might see some incremental benefits, but you're not going to recover until the next update. So unfortunately, if you got hit in the August update, if you fix things, you're not going to really feel it until the March update of this year. And if you got hit by this March update, realistically, you're not going to recover until you do everything right and the next update comes along. So the kind of way to think about it is, if you do get hit, you now have about 3 to 4 months, depending on how fast Google wants to roll out these updates, to make the necessary changes to improve your site. Now, what are the changes you need to make? Google, unfortunately, doesn't give us a lot of direct information about this, but you know, there is a lot of, you know, kind of correlation studies and kind of reading between the lines of what sites benefit and which ones don't. One thing that we see is usually a focus on what we call EEAT. It stands for expertise, experience, authoritativeness, and trust. And this comes straight from Google's quality rater guidelines. Basically, it's just making sure that your site, it looks legitimate. Like, for example, I see a lot of e-commerce sites, they don't have a phone number or an address. They just have a contact form. Well, it's hard to trust a site that doesn't even have an address or phone number. So kind of simple fixes you can do there is go get a Google Voice number, just have some type of recording, and then you know, add a good voicemail. But at least you have a phone number to look more legitimate. Or maybe you don't have a Google My Business profile with any reviews. Maybe you don't have an about page. Maybe it's a faceless e-commerce company. How are you going to trust a company if you don't even know if people actually work for it or not? So having an about page at least looks more legitimate. If you have content doing blogging, are these faceless blog posts or are these written by an expert? So I always recommend, you know, tying your blog post to a person, have a bio about that person, you know, their background, their experience, why they're qualified, why you should trust them. Maybe you create some editorial policy pages talking about like your process for content, your editorial guidelines, so you can trust that the content is accurate and verified. So these are all just examples of things you can do to make your e-commerce site feel bigger than it actually is. And I'm sure for a lot of people listening, it might just be a solopreneur kind of just working from home, doing all these things, and that's fine. But there's still ways you can convey that you're a legitimate site, you know, a brand that users and search engines should trust.
Now, there was a lot packed in there. And so, yeah, what you was EEAT, right?
EEAT.
Okay, awesome. Once the solopreneur fixes all of that, Google comes back and they bounce back with their rankings. What are your top three tips on in terms of an e-commerce website to increase ROI?
Sure. So we'll talk about the 80-20. Like, what's this quick wins you can do to get the most traffic and most revenue. So one of my favorites, and this is a pitfall I see all the time, is making sure you have category descriptions for your category pages. And it doesn't have to be a whole blog post, just having like 150 to 300 words of content on your category pages. And we don't just want fluffy content for the sake of SEO. We actually want helpful content. So talk about what are the benefits of your product? You know, who are these products designed for? Why should somebody go for a premium product over a budget product? You know, what are the materials or the styles? And it kind of like a mini buyer's guide, answering questions that a potential customer might have about your product. I do a lot of e-commerce audits, and I'd say only a portion actually do this and do this correctly. Don't think for a second that you have to put this big, ugly content block on top of your pages and push down your great products. You know, that can have a negative impact on conversion rates and user experience. So a few options is put it at the top of your page, but maybe expand the content block. So it's not just this huge block of content. Maybe you put it at the bottom of the page. So just having some content on your category pages can really help them rank better. And the reason that's so important is most of the big keywords that you're going to be targeting are probably going to be ones you're targeting on your category pages.
Yeah, so it's super helpful. And I definitely don't see category descriptions much. And I know I think we have a couple, but I think we definitely can improve there.
Yeah, long story short, if you're trying to rank for a keyword and you're trying to push a category page for that keyword, you most likely need at least, you know, 150 to 300 words of content on that page. That would be the first one. And sticking with category pages, and I'll focus on this because, you know, from what I've seen, product pages, you're almost too long tail that there's not going to be a lot of big keywords to go after. So most of your most important pages for an e-commerce site are usually going to be your category pages. I always recommend doing some keyword research, whether it's using a paid tool like Ahrefs or SEMrush, or maybe using a free tool like Google Keyword Planner. You want to know what people are searching for and make sure you have category pages based on those keywords. So maybe you're selling beds. Okay, great. You have your beds category page. People are probably searching king size bed, queen size bed. You know, it might be firm beds. It might be, you know, whatever it might be. Do the research, see what people are searching for, and make sure you have specific pages for those keywords.
Very nice. Very nice. When somebody is done with keyword research, they're going to have a long list of keywords. And some of those are going to be, like, to stick with your example of bed, it'll be like different iterations, like sizes or colors.
Yeah.
But what would you say for a typical product, you know, how many keywords should somebody focusing on SEO work on? Like, if you have a list of 1,000, how many of them deserve, you know, with the 80-20 rule, how many of them, what 20% of those keywords or whatever that number is, are going to produce 80% of your results?
Well, that's a very, very fascinating question. And if you go back to the early days of Google, talking by 2010, 2012, you would see an e-commerce site have a page for cheap, you know, gaming laptops. Let's say you'll have a page for cheap gaming laptops. They'll have a page for discount gaming laptops. They'll have a page for budget gaming laptops. They literally create a separate page for each of these keywords because Google wasn't as sophisticated yet. Google didn't realize someone's searching for budget gaming laptops or affordable or cheap. They're all essentially looking for the same thing. And you could, you know, capitalize on that by having these overly specific pages. Well, as Google's evolved, they've gotten a lot better at focusing on search intent and saying, what are people actually looking for? What do they expect? And chances are now the search results for affordable gaming laptops or budget gaming laptops are probably going to be almost the same, because it's kind of a roundabout way of answering your question. But you could have one page targeting, you know, as many relevant keywords as possible. You can take so many derivatives of that. Maybe someone's searching budget gaming laptops online, affordable gaming laptops online, buy affordable gaming. There's literally like hundreds, if not thousands, of permutations for someone looking for a cheap gaming laptop. So there's nothing wrong with targeting thousands of keywords on the same page. What's more important is, you know, what's the main search intent this page is solving, and having one page for that kind of cluster of related keywords. So instead of thinking of like how many individual keywords, think of it as like a grouping. Like, okay, this is my page targeting all these affordable, cheap, budget keywords, and that should be all you need. So there's nothing wrong if it's 10 keywords. There's nothing wrong if it's hundreds or even thousands. What's more important is, you know, what's the main search intent this page is solving.
That makes sense. So you had mentioned a really good story at the beginning of this about the fraudulent credit cards and going in the hole, 20K at a pretty young age. Probably most everyone listening to this knows entrepreneurship comes with some highs and some lows. And so what have been some of the challenges that you've faced as the founder of 180 Marketing, and how have you overcome them?
Running a business and, you know, Cam, we were talking earlier about the burning the boats. Just kind of once you commit to this, you're kind of stuck with it. You know, there's been times earlier on where I was either didn't have enough work and I was stressed out because I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills. And there's been times where I have so much work, I'm stressed out because I don't know how I'm going to get things done. And in full honesty, there was times where I would have fantasies about like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if all my clients fired me tomorrow and I could be free of this behemoth that I've created for myself. But once you fired the man and you're on this path, you know, you kind of burn the boats and you're committed to it. And all the more when you have employees, you're committed to it. So I think it's just, you need to practice resilience. You need to be able to make things small in your mind and not let them exaggerate and seem bigger than they actually are. You need to just realize like, okay, I'm okay. This is what I'm going to do today. And you just, again, slow, steady progress, whatever kind of rut you're in, or whatever challenge you face, it's short term. It's not forever. It will eventually be in the rear view mirror. And you just got to tackle whatever problems in front of you, just one small step at a time.
I like that. Tell us about beerpongstadium.com and what it was like operating in space.
First is kind of like just the side project I did. So I would work full time, my day job as an SEO specialist. And then I get home, open my laptop back up and start working on the site. So I got to learn the inner workings of e-commerce early on. This is kind of like my playground. So it was been a few hours here and there. I'd always get so excited when I get that confirmation email that had a sale. And I'd love going to the manufacturer's website and processing the order and sending it out. Customer service is kind of difficult when you have a full-time job. So it's just, restricted to email only. But it was enjoying, and it was kind of like my escape. So if we talk about like trying to fire the man, it was my hope. It's like, okay, I have an avenue here. I have something here that can get me out of my current situation. So it was fun. Had a few challenges here and there, whether it's customer service or inventory. Someone orders a product, you go to process it on the manufacturer's website and they're out of stock, and you kind of got to figure that out. But overall, it was very fulfilling and very enjoyable.
I think there's a really practical lesson here that's what you chose, right? You're a college student, probably playing beer pong on the weekends. And so that's what you went into. And there are so many people that I've heard say, I want to fire the man. I just don't know what to do. Can you expand on that a little bit? Like the benefits of going into something that you're familiar with?
On the surface, it's like, here's this college kid. Sure, he's going to create this beer pong e-commerce site. But there's a little more strategy that went into it. I wanted something that had a ticket cost, a price where it's not so much that they want to talk to you with a phone, but it's not so small that it's not worthwhile. I wanted a space that wasn't too competitive. But most importantly, the reason I went with beer pong tables, it's one of the few products that you can't buy locally. You can't just go to, Target or Home Depot and buy a beer. Yes, you can buy tables, but not an official beer pong table. So that was what drew me to it, is I thought there was some opportunity there, and it was something I was interested about. But, when all was said and done, I pretty much just broke even on the site. I'm only making $40 profit per table. Once you factor in hosting and, link building costs and content costs and everything, by the time I sold it, I pretty much just recouped what I put into it. So it wasn't this like huge sale where I could go celebrate and live on the beach. Like, all right, well, I no longer am negative for this business. That's kind of cool. And then, rolling out 3D printers, which also, I mentioned that before, wasn't the most successful. And even before my beer pong site, I had an AdSense site with a baseball blog. And then sometime in there, I had another site where I had a, SEO blog, and that was very difficult. And then I've tried SaaS. So like, I've tried and failed so many times. Even the beer pong business, I broke even. So I wouldn't even call that like this massive success. So it kind of goes back to resilience, where your first idea, you're probably going to get it wrong, but you can learn from that and roll that into your second idea, which you might also get wrong. And then you can learn from that to the third idea, and just you keep going until you've learned enough lessons that everything clicks. And then you can get that project or website or idea that really just takes off.
That's really, really good advice. And I think that's something that keeps people on the sidelines, is, well, what if I fail? And the answer is, you probably will. And
yeah, so you should.
Yeah, yeah. But let me ask you this. So you invested a lot of time, a lot of energy and money into beer pong, beerpongstadium.com. At the end of it, you broke even. Would you do it again if you could replay?
There's two words that I want everyone listening to this to really understand. Educational expense. Yes, you might not make money. It might not be a success, but people are spending, 30, 50, 100 grand on a 4-year college degree. With my beer pong site, I was losing money for a long time, but I learned so much. I learned about e-commerce sites and marketing and pricing and, you know, product photography and customer service and, you know, databases and website. I learned so much, and it cost, you know, when I broke even, it essentially cost me nothing. So I think if you reframe yourself of like, oh, this was a failure, and instead reframe it as this is just an educational expense. And now I have a lot more knowledge and skills that I didn't have before. And I'm going to be that much better next time I take a go at this.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent take. And also, you know, thanks for sharing, Jeff, on like, you know, you tried something, you failed, you tried something else, you failed. And all, you know, like, especially someone that's maybe they're listening to the show, they're just like, they haven't started yet. And they're like David mentioned, they're just tripping them up. But what if I fail? Well, you should fail. Like, you're not going to be successful. Like, maybe you're very lucky and you're successful on your first venture. But even in that first venture, you're going to have small failures all day long, every day, and recovering from those. I think that's where the mindset of being greedy and persevering is. That's where that comes from, being a successful entrepreneur, because you can pick up, take your lessons learned from that, move on to the next thing, learn, get better. Each time you do that, you're just getting smarter, you know, and you're kind of building your toolbox to handle problems along the way. Then, like you mentioned, Jeff, the educational experience you get from that, even if it's a break even, you won, because you got a lot of experience. Before we move on to the fire round, one question. We can't have a beer pong expert on the show without asking, what are the top two or three beer pong tips and tricks you have for people?
Oh, man, it takes me back to writing my beer pong tips page and trying to get that to rank. One is consistency. So however you shoot, do the exact same way every time. I used to compete with archery. And archery and any type of competitive shooting, it's all about consistency, where you hold things the same way you did, you stand away. So make sure you're always the same distance from the table. Make sure you're releasing the same way. Try to just be as consistent with every motion every single time, so that way you're not kind of trying to hit a moving target. Another one is, you know, beer pong, you got the water cups, you know, sometimes it'll fall on the beer, it gets wet. If your shooting hand is wet, it's going to throw off your shot. So you always want to pick the ball up with your non-shooting hand, dry it off completely, and then you pass it off. So it's just kind of one more thing to help be more consistent.
Okay, awesome. So now on, for me, Parents Day at college, when I go visit my son, I'm gonna level up my game on beer pong.
That's it. Go ahead, yeah, teach him a thing or two.
That's right. Ken's gonna be shooting with dry hands. I love it. I've got one more question I want to squeeze in here before we move on to the fire round. So AI is changing the world. And we're still kind of figuring out how exactly it's going to change the world. But from a content standpoint, it seems to put a multiplier in front of, you know, the quantity of content you can put out with AI is higher. And so as you look to the next 1 to 3 years, how do you think AI is going to change the landscape of SEO? And what things can people do with D2C websites to leverage AI?
That is a great question. So as far as Google's stance on AI content, they don't care whether it's written by humans or written by machines or AI. They kind of have to say that because they have Gemini as well, their own AI thing. But in general, they really don't care how it's produced. What they care about more is the final product. Is the final piece of content that you produced have high engagement metrics? Are people bouncing or are they staying on it? Is it factually correct or does it include things that just aren't true? So assuming your final piece of content you're publishing on your site is a good piece of content that's helpful, informative, and provides a good user experience, it's totally fine to use AI to do it. So how this has kind of shifted things is, well, on one hand, you have the people that are taking shortcuts where they just do an AI article, don't even fact check it, don't even do anything, just publish it and do that in mass. Those people are having a bad day. They're getting penalized and they're losing traffic. There's a huge update just earlier this month in March, specifically targeted that. We saw a lot of lower quality sites just get, you know, penalized to oblivion. So they're really starting to drop the hammer and they're only going to continue. On the flip side, AI is a great tool and a great starting point. So I like to kind of position AI content as a starting point in your content production workflow. I think people were moving away from human writers to AI writers with human editors. So what kind of the new model that we're seeing a lot is you use AI to do your first draft, and then you have humans, you know, fact check it, maybe add some images or tables or call out boxes and kind of really polish it up a bit so the final product looks good. So it's more of a time-saving tool and more of a starting point than the end-all be-all content production tool.
I like it.
Yeah, sure. So Jeff, all of our guests that come on the show, we put them through the ringer in what's called the fire round. It's a rapid series of questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
What is your favorite book?
4-Hour Work Week.
Nice. What are your hobbies?
I like watching MMA and stand-up comedy.
Awesome. Who's your favorite comedian?
I like Taylor Tibbin Tomlinson a lot. I like Brett Kreischer. I like, you know, Bill Burr. I'd say those are some of my favorites.
Okay, nice. What is one thing that you do not miss about working for the man?
People tell me what to do and how to do it.
Excellent. Last one. What do you think sets apart successful entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Knowing what you want and being resilient.
Absolutely. I want to thank you for being a guest on the Firing the Man podcast. If people are interested in getting in touch with you or working with 180 Marketing, what would be the best way?
Yeah, if you're curious at all, you can go to 180marketing.com. What I tell people is, you know, we're not here to sell you. If you just want to see it, SEO as an opportunity for you, we can kind of look at your rankings and your site and just see, is it an opportunity? Because sometimes SEO is not the best channel. If you want to know, just reach out and you can visit us at 180marketing.com.
Outstanding. And we'll post links to all that in the show notes. Jeff, want to thank you for being a guest on the Firing the Man podcast, and we're looking forward to staying in touch.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Before you go, we wanted to share a new service that Ken and I have been using called Getida that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, Getida.com, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for Firing the Man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?